Hello, friends. Welcome to episode 79, which is called WOAT, which is an acronym for the worst of all time. And I'll give you one guess what that's going to be about. Just one guess. See if you can figure it out. And of course, I want to talk a little bit about history's greatest villains. You know, all the real ones like Lord Sauron or Joker or Hannibal Lecter. And of course, Donald Trump. And all those are real people, right? They're pretty much all the same level of real. And what is it about evil that attracts people? Now, this is the first episode, really since the election, which was a couple months ago. Not like anything happened, not like anything too big to really get into, or that there's been a lot of news or anything, but I took a bit of a news break. I mean, the election happened, and I'll get into that and talk about how historic that was and some of the feelings I had. You know, November, December, most of January, it's been Trump, 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 and I just plainly don't follow it. I don't really go and look at it that much. I mean, I see the articles. I know what he's generally been accused of, which is pretty heinous, not just the Capitol riots, but plainly trying to subvert democracy. I've called him an aspiring tyrant probably 1,000 times. I think that's 100% true. I think if he was able to steal the election, he would have. We know he would have. We know he's tried desperately to. And the only thing really stopping him from being somebody like his heroes, Vladimir Putin and Xi Jinping and Kim Jong-un, is he can't do it. I think he's been surprised at how difficult it's been for him to do stuff that he really wants to do and how there hasn't really been a lot of popular support for it. And I know people are saying, well, that's crazy. 74 million voted and there's a few thousand people that rioted in the Capitol. But I think he's shocked at how little popular support there has been for him to steal this election. You know, a few thousand people in the Capitol, that's not anywhere near 74 million that voted for him. And when he had that million MAGA march to begin with, oh God, there wasn't even close to a million people. I don't know if there was 50,000 people there. And this is in D.C., where people from Maryland and Virginia, states he didn't win but still got millions of votes, North Carolina, a state he supposedly won, wink, wink. It should have been really easy for him to get several million people to come to this, because D.C. is just a stone's throw away from most of these heavy Trump country type places like West Virginia and Kentucky and nearby states. And he didn't. They just plainly didn't show up. And they haven't been out in the streets raising hell for him the way that he thought they would, and that maybe some of the media thought they would. Episode 75 was about, will there be a second civil war? I very plainly said there will not be. And people are like, well, you're still going to stick to that because we haven't had the inauguration yet. So we don't know if there's going to be, we don't know exactly what's going to happen. Yeah, I'm still going to stick to that. I think every day his base gets a little bit smaller. And I think that people would say, well, that's an insane statement, Alabama liberal. But keep in mind now, Alabama liberals never steered you wrong before. Joe Biden flat out loses the Iowa caucus by a pretty big margin. And I say, don't worry about it. He's still going to be the nominee. Everybody's like, you're nuts. There's no way he's going to be the nominee. He comes along, but is the nominee. I'm like, don't worry about it. He's going to beat Trump. No, there's no way. He beats Trump. He's going to pick Kamala Harris. No, he's going to pick Stacey Abrams. And they came up with all these, you know, really insane Elizabeth Warren type tickets that would have been bad. He picks Kamala Harris. So I'm just saying, listen to me when I tell you the ugliest truth and that the media doesn't want to face is that Trump's days are numbered. And I know that sounds like it'll never happen, but it's going to. And I tell you why I say that. George W. Bush in 2008 was insanely popular amongst the Republican Party, amongst conservatives, amongst the Southeast. People forget. They've completely forgotten this, but I don't forget. 2007, I was at Auburn, and even though he was unpopular everywhere else, there was those little W stickers on the back of all the SUVs. People have forgotten this, but you could put a little black square with a white W on it. Looked even racial, even at the time, that you might have been in the KKK, but you could put that on the back of your SUV or your pickup truck or whatever it was, and that showed your support for Bush. Now, a lot of the same people that had that, even in 2007, 2008, when he's not popular nationwide, they still had that stuff. But a lot of people that did have it, today they'd be like, well, Bush sucked. And they would freely admit that. It is amazing how quickly the Republican Party has always pivoted to somebody else. They love Nixon. They love Nixon. Then Watergate happens, and they don't love him no more. They love Bush. They just don't really remember how popular he truly was, especially in the Deep South and places that Trump is now popular in. 6 months after he left office, it was a little bit less Bush. They started to shift to the Tea Party. Then the Tea Party was all the rage. Then the Tea Party got out of control, and they started to shift to Trump. Trump, within 6 months, I guarantee you, people will begin to say, well, you know, he was always a half-assed Democrat. He was never a real Republican to begin with. You can already see people start to peel away from him and shift away from him. You can already see it on social media. which is where you can kind of have your finger in the wind a little bit. And I don't just mean Twitter. I find a lot of the real hardcore conservative nuts are like YouTube comment sections, Quora, places like that. They're already shifting away from him. In the run-up to the election, the 6 months before the election, it was, if Joe Biden wins, we need to get our guns and take to the street and have an armed rebellion. The second Joe Biden won, so who do you think will run in 2024? Who do you think it's going to be? You think it'll be Ted Cruz? And I mean, they were already starting to shift to other people. And I think that people say, no, it's the Trump party. It's the Trump party. He's got that party under control. No, he doesn't. He's just become the first president ever to be impeached twice. And by members of his own party. Keep in mind, Andrew Johnson, he never had a Democrat vote to impeach him. Bill Clinton never had a Democrat vote to impeach him. I would say for very good reason. They didn't deserve to be impeached for what they were being impeached for. Donald Trump had Mitt Romney vote to impeach him. And Justin Amash. See, Justin Amash was a Republican until he switched to the Libertarian Party. So there's an asterisk beside that. But if you count Justin Amash, and I kind of do, considering that he was a Republican until he literally switched parties, you had a member of the House and a member of the Senate, Republicans, voting to impeach a president. Never happened before. A member of their own party votes to impeach them. Now, during the second impeachment in the House, he had 10 Republicans vote to impeach him. That's never happened before. So this idea that, oh, well, it'll always be the party of Trump, even when he's out of power, deplatformed, kicked off of social media, and a total leper and a pariah, it'll still be the party. I think that's a media fantasy. I think they want that to be true more than it ever will be true. We don't know what Trump's plans are going to be after he leaves office. He could defect to Russia and literally move to Russia. And then it's very hard to still see some of the same people that are willing to take a bullet for him now being like, yeah, well, Trump's a literal Russian spy and we knew it all along. It's real hard to see him getting that support. He could defect to Russia. He could go to jail. He could die of a heart attack. I don't think he's going to live a lot longer, but I've never seen such an unhealthy man in his 70s continue to have this big, long life. So people are thinking, no, this guy that eats cheeseburgers every day and, you know, steak and ketchup. I think that's like his favorite meal is steak and ketchup, which is fucking ghastly, by the way, just from a culinary experience. I mean, give me some A1 steak sauce or even barbecue if you're going to do barbecue. But I mean, ketchup is too sweet. It doesn't go with steak at all. It's really sick to think about those paired together. That's just a side note. I don't know. That's not really important. But he could easily die. I don't think he is going to be around a lot longer by hook or by crook. He defects to Russia. He goes to jail. He dies. People have always said, well, the difference between Trump and Nixon and Hoover and all these horrible Republican presidents before, they went away. Like, they were okay giving up the spotlight and moving on to something else and doing something else. And Trump's not like that. I understand that, but it's not really up to him. All these social media platforms have begun to kick him off. Facebook has kicked him off. Twitter has kicked him off. This is the right thing to do. A lot of people are debating, like, oh, free speech and all this shit. It is the right thing to do. First of all, to me, it's ironic that we've heard for over a year, Facebook is the devil. Twitter is the devil. These platforms, especially Facebook, people have hammered them and hammered them and hammered them. Well, they went from barely ever standing up to Trump to being like, he's kicked off our platform. He's deplatformed and we're just not going to have him on there anymore. And I thought that was amazing that we've heard that these big tech companies are pure evil for a year. And yet they're going to do what the media companies, the so-called legitimate media, I'm putting up quote marks, air quote marks, legitimate media will not do, which is completely deplatform Trump and not cover him. And so you have Facebook, which is, we've been told is evil, and they've kicked him off. Twitter's kicked him off. Google and Apple have taken away the infrastructure for the app Parler. So this conservative app that was getting big, Parler, which was insane, by the way, but it had all these conservative people being like, the people who get kicked off of Twitter, if you can imagine who even gets kicked off of there. If you ever look at Twitter, it's amazing to think somebody even could be. But these people that were getting kicked off of Quora and the YouTube comment section, they go to Parler. Well, you know, we still have power over these apps. They think that they can just exist without us. But Apple and Google, they control the infrastructure for these apps. And they kick people off those platforms all the time. The Apple Store keeps a very tight control over what they allow and what they don't allow. I'm actually very encouraged by this. I'm encouraged by the fact that Parler basically cannot operate without one of the big four tech companies agreeing to have them, and they're not agreeing to have them right now. And I think that's appropriate. You hear stories all the time. There'll be a self-published author who just gets thrown out of Amazon. And they don't even know why. And that's their livelihood. They might make $100,000 a year from self-publishing ebooks on Amazon. Amazon just kicks them off and they don't explain why. Apple could kick me off of their podcast and their iTunes. And they don't ever really give reasons or explain why or talk about the content or whatever. The YouTube algorithms don't favor me at all. On YouTube, the bigger a video gets, the more people watch it. And they recommend more people to that. If you look at the Alabama Liberal YouTube channel, my most popular video by a mile is one about the merger between Canada and the United States. It's got more views, just about more views than all the other videos. And I've made hundreds of them, probably close to 200 by now. More views than all the other videos put together. Second most popular video is about, I think it's Alabama football or something about reserve seating, movie theaters sucking. So, you know, three videos that are real good representations of what Alabama liberals all about. I've made hundreds of podcast videos and put it out there, videos about Trump. And really one that I like is like, how can someone be a nationalist when they're Russian backed? How can hostile foreign powers like Russia and China back somebody and that supposedly are nationalistic right wing? I wish more people would point that point out. That video's got like 50 hits. But that's because the more popular a video gets, it's like a snowball effect and it gets bigger and bigger. And those platforms could kick me off tomorrow. But I like that they're kicking off Alex Jones and I like that they're kicking off Trump and some of these people because they shouldn't platform this bullshit and this crap that is just killing this country. Slowly, it's a slow cancer to have people. And I know people like this. I'm sure most of you listening to this do. You say, well, Joe Biden won the race. Well, that's not what Mark Levin says on Fox News. Or that's not what this guy I watch on YouTube says. And we've put almost too much emphasis, I think, on the YouTube commenters and the Instagram influencers. They don't have to go there because it's Fox News. Fox News is the largest remaining problem. And so it kills me that Facebook and Twitter are kicking Trump off. Apple and Google are taking down Parler. But the so-called legitimate media like CNN, they're still going to cover Trump like he's still president. They're still going to give this idiot, egomaniac, aspiring tyrant, corrupt bigot a huge bullhorn and platform to talk his lies with. And so I'm a little offended by the fact that MSNBC and CNN and the Nightly News, and they've all gotten so cocky and big for their britches, like, oh, Facebook is an open sewer. They don't have the journalistic standards that we have. And there Trump is, talking his insane bullshit, and they're covering it like it's gospel. From November to December to January, a big part of the reason I didn't watch a lot of news was I don't want to hear it. I'm tired of him. I'm sick of him. I don't want to see him. I've noticed a lot of liberals, and I'm wondering if they're going to be able to let him go out of office. I understand why they're still talking about him now, because he is still powerful. He is still the president of the United States for 2 days or whatever he's got left. So for that 75-day transition period, it did make some sense, I think, to cover him. But I'm wondering if they're going to let him go. Like, I watched Real Time with Bill Maher, and one of his guests was telling Bill, like, no, Trump's finished. He's done. He's not going to be that big a deal. And Bill's like, I don't know. I don't think that's going to happen. It looked like he was weirdly protective of the idea of he still wants to talk about him nonstop. I'm concerned about that as much as anything else. I mean, yes, there's all these people say, oh, the white nationalists, they overran the Capitol. Of course, that's very concerning. But what happens when the Stephen Colberts and the Seth Meyers, who have not written a joke in 4 years? Seth Meyers, if you watch his show Monday through Friday, he just does a closer look, which is him sitting at a desk talking about what Trump tweeted, what he said, what he did. Stephen Colbert basically does the same thing. They have barely written a joke in 4 years. And I'm wondering if they're going to be able to let this clown go, if they're going to be able to move on. One of the guests on Real Time literally said, won't it be great when you can do your first show and you don't have to talk about Trump and you don't bring him up and you don't talk about him? And Bill says, but I don't think that's going to happen. I mean, it was almost like an addict. Won't it be great the first day of your life that you don't take OxyContin and you can flush these pills down the toilet and not take them? No, I don't know if that's going to happen. I have back problems. You don't understand, you know? It looked like he was strangely protective of keeping Trump alive in the popular imagination. And I'm afraid that they're going to do that, that they're going to continue to cover him. It was one of the earlier episodes in this season, but it was like 59 or something where I said, will the media allow us to have a boring president? Will they allow us to do that? And I, for one, being somebody who likes to dig a bit deeper into issues, and you can tell that from Alabama Liberal, the videos, the podcast, the articles, I'm not content to just spend the rest of my life, Trump sucks. We all fucking know Trump sucks. But you know, there's a lot of people who have nothing to do with Trump who've gotten away with murder for the last 4 years. I hate to keep beating the drum about private schools, but it was not only amazing that they did that to us, but that I could not find a journalist in Los Angeles because I couldn't tie it directly to Trump or a celebrity. I couldn't find one to cover it. And so I'm wondering if journalism in America is going to have an awakening. And by awakening, I mean rebirth. I mean like back from the fucking dead to where we understand that journalism is not just covering Trump's tweets and sending that out there. There have been other villains outside of Trump world who have gotten away with murder for the last 4 years because they simply are not getting covered by the media, which has this myopic focus on this clown and not even a very good focus on him. For every story that you see where it's like, well, Trump's calling Raffensperger and he's putting pressure on him to overturn the election, there are stories about COVID that are kind of falling under the radar. All these missing medical supplies. This is a huge scandal that the Trump administration basically stole about 30% of the vaccines and they don't know where they are. They can't find them. So you see stories like that. Anybody, by the way, this is a little bit of a side note, but I heard all throughout the election campaign, and now that it's over, I feel like talking about this, they would go against Trump, maybe against his style, maybe against the way he talked, maybe against the fact that he just didn't believe in democracy. I would see the people in the bunker, the Trumpers, I would see them dig in on the fact that he handled coronavirus well. And that seemed to be the hill they were ready to die on, was it being, well, there's nothing no one else could have done. No one else could have done any better. That's bullshit. That's probably one of the biggest lies. And all these documentaries you could see on Hulu, if you have Hulu, and I recommend maybe doing a free trial just for this. There's a documentary called Totally Under Control. And it's about the Trump administration's disastrous handling of the COVID virus. It's a Trump quote saying, oh, the virus is totally under control. And that's why it's called that. It's an ironic title. But it just shows brick by brick, step by step, why America had the worst coronavirus response in the world. And I'll admit, early on in the virus, I mean, it is China's fault. And I like to blame China. And there was so much misinformation that, but I don't think I was fully aware. And of course, it's the media's job to tell us these things. It's their job to do journalism and cover it, of all the mistakes he was making and how badly they didn't make the case that he's letting each state bid for their medical supplies. And so you have Michigan and Virginia and California bidding for medical supplies against each other. But then if he's letting the states do this, which is a disaster, why does the federal government then come in and bid against them and run up the price 20 to 30% more? We're going to find out, and I can guarantee you that we will find out Jared Kushner and Don Jr. and all his inner circle own part of these medical supply companies. And that's why the bidding was driven up sky high. There's a reason that America has had more coronavirus deaths than anywhere else in the world by a mile. It's not just that China's fudged their numbers. You have India. The virus should have been out of control and rampant and running wild through India. It should have killed a lot more of them than us, quite frankly. If you look at population density, the fact that they share some borders with China, the fact that they don't have the same medical infrastructure and supplies and things. So we have to look at that and say, well, yeah, even if China lied their balls off about their numbers and their fatality deaths, which I believe they did, why did India not have the disaster that we had? Why did Indonesia not have the disaster we had? Why did Nigeria? Why did Bangladesh? When you look at the world's 10 most populated countries, China, India, the United States, Indonesia, Brazil, Pakistan, Nigeria, Bangladesh, Russia, Mexico. None of these countries are really what you would call true first world countries. None of these countries are Switzerland. These mega population countries that don't have the same medical infrastructure, they don't have the same level of the general infrastructure set up, like general sanitation. They don't have necessarily a country that's spread as far apart. They're not having the response that we're having. It's Trump. It's his administration. It's their awful, awful coronavirus response. And you can blame that to him and his task force and all the people around him that just didn't want a coordinated federal response. They didn't want to cover it. And I think that this plays a huge role in why John Ossoff and Raphael Warnock were able to pick up these two seats in Georgia. And this is truly historic. Georgia hasn't had two Democratic senators represent a very long time ago. But I like their odds. I thought that they had good odds. I hated it, the fact that they were going to do their runoffs and the media was basically like, well, we all know it's a long shot. Again, it comes back to the fact that it's like they want it to be harder than it is. They want it to be that Biden comes in with a Republican Senate and a Democratic House and they can't get anything done and they can't agree on anything and nothing happens. They like this idea of gridlock and stagnation and nothing being able to get done. And even if Trump's not the biggest villain anymore, they can shift it to McConnell and he can be their new boo-hiss villain. I think they don't want things to get better. I think they like things being shit, and the worse they can be, the better it is for them. I thought that they had a good shot, and it wasn't just Trump, and it wasn't just the fact that Perdue and Loeffler are terrible candidates. They're awful candidates. Both candidates were caught up in insider trading scandals. Kelly Loeffler was literally the wealthiest member of Congress. She was worth over $500 million. Some of that is because of old money bags, Daddy Warbucks, her husband, who is the literal owner of the New York Stock Exchange. But some of it's her own. Some of it's her own insider trading. The fact that she's, I call her Carpetbagger Barbie because she's from Illinois. She had no ties to Georgia, really, until she moves there as an adult, owns like the WNBA Dream Atlanta basketball team or co-owner or something like that, moves to Georgia, and then becomes a big contributor to Brian Kemp, former Secretary of State, now governor, because he stole it from Stacey Abrams, so we know a little bit about his backstory. Buys her seat from him. Brian Kemp appoints her to that seat, which she's not from Georgia. She didn't go to school there. She wasn't born and raised there. These kind of things bother me because I saw Tupperville did the same thing. He's from Arkansas, and some people say that he lives in Florida. He doesn't really even live in Alabama. He will probably not step foot in Alabama for 5 of the 6 years he's a senator there. And so he will do a very poor job representing the state because he'll be in Washington, D.C., or he'll be in Florida. And so he's not really going to be an Alabama senator. And so Kelly Loeffler's doing the same thing for Georgia, which bothers the shit out of me. So she buys her Senate seat, her appointment from Brian Kemp. She buys an endorsement from Trump. Even Trump's biggest sycophant, Matt Gaetz, said that Loeffler basically bribed Trump to endorse her over Doug Collins, is what Matt Gaetz was basically saying. And if Matt Gaetz is willing to go against Trump on anything, that's how bad it is, right? Because that guy's one of the biggest butt plugs there is in the Congress. You have her representing a state she's not from, has no ties to, buys her seat by being a huge financial backer to the Republicans, and so then they give her a Senate seat. You have something similar with David Perdue. David Perdue is first cousins with Sonny Perdue. Sonny Perdue is the former Georgia governor and now Trump's Secretary of Agriculture. So former Georgia governor Sonny Perdue becomes Secretary of Agriculture, and his first cousin David Perdue is a senator from Georgia. So you have two senators. There's a lot of, like, how did they get their seats? How did they come about them? A lot of questions like that. They're both under insider trading probes and scandals. But I really think it's COVID, biggest killer of Republican votes, and they just don't see it. They don't get it. They don't see it. They don't care about it. And it's to their folly. It's not just Trump, and it's not just insider trading. It's COVID, stupid. I want to just scream at the TV like they say it's the economy, stupid. It's COVID, stupid, because COVID is the economy. They don't understand that the majority of American GDP comes from cities. The majority of GDP is Los Angeles, New York, Chicago, San Francisco, these big blue cities that Mitch McConnell hates. When he talks about the blue state bailout. How ridiculous is that, by the way, the blue state bailout, as though the American economy is driven by Cracker Barrel in fucking Wyoming. The blue state bailout is the American economy. If Los Angeles and San Francisco and New York and Chicago and Washington, D.C. and all these blue cities in blue states and blue cities in red states like Atlanta, Georgia, that's over 3/4 of the American GDP. And so if you let these cities fail or let them keep going further into debt, that hurts the American economy. And it doesn't matter if a Bass Pro Shop in fucking Idaho can stay open or they're doing great or somehow. It doesn't matter. That's a very small fraction of the actual American economy. The blue cities have been hammered. Talking to people in rural Alabama, which where I'm from is a rural part of Alabama, they don't understand this because they haven't had to line up outside a grocery store for 30 minutes to buy their groceries. They have not done this. So they don't really understand what's been happening with COVID, but 75% of the country does because they live in cities or within 10 miles of a city. That's the population breakdown, that 3/4 of the country lives in a city or in a suburb of a city. But a lot of the Trump voters don't. So when they go to state capitals, and they're raising hell. They don't understand. They don't have the same level. For example, Los Angeles. If you want to go to Target or Costco or Trader Joe's or Whole Foods or anywhere, if you go there on the wrong time of day, there could be a line. And they say, we're only letting so many people come into this store. So there's going to be a 30-minute wait outside the store. Now, I find this the peak irony because Trump told us if Joe Biden's elected, there'll be bread lines. There'll be socialism. And they show footage of Venezuela. And they're like, in Venezuela, people have to wait 30 minutes outside a Target store. We were doing that here. We were doing the shit that you're fear-mongering against, talking about wait outside a store. And, oh, we go into a store. There's no toilet paper. There was no fucking toilet paper in the stores. Like, your favorite kind of food? Forget that. You go to a grocery store, like, I think I'd feel like spaghetti and meatballs tonight. Oh, I wound up with a potato salad, a big bucket of it, because that's all they had left. I guess that's what I'll eat tonight. And it's been like that since coronavirus started. And I'm happy to get it because that's the way that things have been. It's, oh, we need some peanut butter and some jelly and some bread. And we came back with mustard and crackers. It's really been terrible. And most people are living life that way. And the fact that Republicans didn't care, they didn't pass a huge stimulus before the election, even between the election and the Georgia Senate runoffs. I mean, there was a $600 check. I think that's fucking pathetic. March 2020, when they gave that $1,200 check, Mnuchin was like, oh, well, $1,200, you know, that'll last the American people about 10 weeks or so. Like, anybody in this country lives on $120 a week, every single week. This is your rent, your health care, your gas, your food, your utilities. Ridiculous. Well, that's 10 weeks, but 10 months went by. between the first stimulus and the second stimulus. When the second stimulus came along, it was $600. It's just really not enough for most people that are suffering. And they don't understand that, and they don't get it, and Republicans plainly don't get it. And if Mitch McConnell had held on to Senate power, there would not be a third stimulus check, and they wouldn't even be talking about one. But we just gave you $600 between March and January, and now you want another check? There's no way. Like, I think that it was so funny to see Lindsey Graham and idiots like that. What an old bitch Lindsey Graham is. What a just unbelievable fraud and bitch. But to see him go on Fox News and say, if the two Senate races go for the Democrats, that means Chuck Schumer's in charge of Congress. That means Joe Biden can get things accomplished. And he's fear-mongering that shit on Fox News. Outside the 10 million people are ultra-conservative and that scares them. There's 100 million people that are like, we'll finally get a fucking stimulus check. And I think it really showed why the Republicans lost the presidency and the Senate. Because over and over again, it was Hunter Biden's laptop. Where's our stimulus check? Where in the fuck is our second stimulus check? And that was the independent voters and the swing voters and the moderate voters and the undecided voters. That's practically all they cared about. Where's our stimulus check? What are you doing about COVID? Well, here's why we get Hunter Biden's laptop showed up at a blind computer repairman's. And as he was trying to fix it, he went through his emails, which, by the way, is very fucking shady. That's like total invasion of privacy, even if that were true, which it's not. They kept spinning more and more elaborate conspiracies. And they thought that everybody cared about that because they're in that bubble. They're in that conservative bubble of thought. Fox News and social media, and they don't know how to talk to people who are not just sitting there streamlining Mark Levin's show every fucking day. They don't know how to talk to people who are not obsessed with this shit like they are. So when the average, where's our stimulus check? We're working on that. But let me tell you how bad Joe Biden really is. And it's like that they didn't give a shit. Nobody cared. And it was just unbelievable that they kept pounding that drum, but they refused to pass a huge stimulus before the election. I think Trump would have lost anyway, but it would have been closer. People kept saying, oh no, Trump, now he did very well. Since this is the first podcast I've had since he lost, let me just shoot holes in this fact that he did well during the race. Because everybody said, I'm surprised it's as close as it was. 7 million votes is not fucking close. I don't know where people are getting this from, this alternate reality that that's a close presidential election. Barack Obama in 2012 was extremely popular. He beat Mitt Romney. Nobody said that race was close. He only beat Mitt Romney by 5 million votes. So in 2012, a popular Democratic president who wins what many people would consider kind of a landslide second term only beats Mitt Romney by 5 million votes. Trump loses by 7 million votes. It's the biggest beating that an incumbent president has taken since Herbert Hoover. And I want to discuss this because Trump, if you really go back and look at different presidents who have lost re-election, George H.W. Bush. Well, he wouldn't have lost re-election if Ross Perot hadn't won. So Ross Perot, he siphons about 20% of the vote away from George H.W. Bush. Bill Clinton wins. And that becomes the last time that we've had an incumbent president lose. 4 out of 5 of the last incumbents before Trump were re-elected. It's very difficult to beat an incumbent president, especially an incumbent Republican. But George H.W. Bush manages it. Then you have to go back to Gerald Ford, who was never elected. Gerald Ford wasn't elected. He was Nixon's vice president. He took over after the Watergate scandal. Jimmy Carter beat him. So that was the last time we had a Republican incumbent lose, somebody that was never really even elected, never should have been president. That was the last two. Those are historically rare. Before Gerald Ford, you have to time travel all the way back to Herbert Hoover. Gee, what could have happened to hurt Herbert Hoover's election chances? Oh, I know. The Great Depression. Obviously, historically pretty rare to have something like that going on. Herbert Hoover loses in a bloodbath. Then you got to time travel back to Taft. And that was the last Republican incumbent to lose. Why did Taft lose? Because Teddy Roosevelt took the unprecedented step of declaring a third party the Bull Moose Party. And he runs as an independent and he runs against Taft. And he splits all those votes away from Taft, allowing Woodrow Wilson to become really the only Democratic president between Andrew Johnson and him was Grover Cleveland. Pretty rare at that time for Democrats to take the Oval Office, but he does because Teddy Roosevelt splits the party in half. That's every time a Republican president other than Trump has lost. Since the 1800s, you got to go back and find ones. And then you can find ones like Benjamin Harrison, who were never really elected. That was like the ultimate popular vote being overturned by the Electoral College and things like that. So if you discount Taft, who had Teddy Roosevelt split the party, you discount George H.W. Bush, who had Ross Perot split the party, you discount Gerald Ford, who was never elected, and you discount Herbert Hoover, had the Great Depression going on, Trump is really the first Republican incumbent to lose merely because people don't like him. There's nothing like what the others faced. There was no vigorous third-party bid splitting the party in half. Even during the Republican primary, he didn't really have strong opposition. Bill Weld and Joe Walsh. Joe Walsh, a disgraced former congressman, is nobody's idea of like, oh, he's going to take on the incumbent president and win. So he really didn't have like a vigorous primary, unlike a lot of the others. Even George H.W. Bush, even before Perot, he had Pat Buchanan run against him and primary him. Gerald Ford, before he lost to Jimmy Carter, he had Ronald Reagan run against him and primary him. So they had vigorous primary challengers that signaled how weak they were. Trump didn't have any of that shit. This is the first time that a Republican incumbent has lost since at least the 1800s, where people just don't like him. They just simply don't like him. They can't watch him anymore. They don't want to see him on TV. And the media's going to find that out the hard way, I'm afraid, where they keep promoting this guy and they keep putting him out there like we all just want to see him or whatever. They're going to find out the hard way that, like, no, we're ready to turn the page. We're ready to focus on where's our fucking stimulus check is the primary thing that we're going to be screaming at these people, which they still don't understand that. They don't get it. And the media's done a horrible job of explaining Nancy Pelosi versus Mitch McConnell. Well, both parties held up those stimulus checks. What Nancy Pelosi was holding up was not a stimulus. The Republicans wanted to pass a so-called stimulus that was $900 billion that did not have the individual checks in it. So when they said things like, well, both parties held up a stimulus, that's only true if you're in the corporate media. That's only true if you're an executive at a huge corporation and you wanted them to basically give you a blowjob on payroll tax cuts and some corporate subsidies and things like that. That's the only people in America who would look at the McConnell plan and the Pelosi plan and say, well, they're both being obstinate. McConnell didn't want individual checks. And so he wouldn't approve that. The Senate never approved those checks until very recently, the $600 ones. But for months and months and months, he was holding that up. Pelosi wanted big, fat individual checks to Americans, which is what most people consider the actual stimulus. And the media did a horrible job of breaking that down. Can you imagine if Pelosi had agreed to McConnell's stimulus and they said, oh, the second stimulus has passed. Hey, where's my individual check? Because they didn't have it in it. And so can you imagine how ripped off and disappointed most people would feel? Well, don't worry about that because Target just got a huge corporate tax cut. So it's all going to trickle out. You'll see that it's really the best thing for everybody. I think that for right now, small businesses have been killed. I can go online and look around Los Angeles area, and I've talked about this in 78, but a lot of stuff that we used to do and enjoy as a family and have fun doing, it's closed. And I don't just mean, you know, for coronavirus, I think it's closed for good. Any small business. So I'll give you just one very specific example. There was a place called Glow Zone, and it only had like maybe 3 or 4 locations, but it was kind of going to be like growing and perhaps be a chain. They had bumper cars, they had laser tag, but the theme was glow in the dark. They had arcade machines and things like that, glow-in-the-dark mini golf. Obviously, they've been hammered for coronavirus. They've been shut down since March. And I went the other day and tried to find their website. They're closed for good. On Yelp, it says closed for good. And their website, when you click in their website, Glows on LA, it just goes to like a blank page. Like their website has not been renewed, which to me means I don't know if they're ever going to come back. I think the chain's just out of business. So-called small business, which Republicans supposedly are so in love with, and they always want to protect small business, you know, salt of the earth. But that had 2 or 3 locations. They're closed. Chuck E. Cheese has filed for bankruptcy. So what you've seen is all the income inequality, which was a big deal even before COVID. As everybody talking about income inequality, Bernie Sanders ran his whole campaign against it. But people were talking about income inequality even before COVID. Once Trump is out of the way, people are going to finally discover, oh, wait, this is now worse than ever. Because you've had the Targets and the Costcos and the Walmarts and the Amazons, they've been fine in the retail game. They've had bigger business than ever. But then you go one step down and it's like, oh, Papyrus Papers filed for bankruptcy and Brooks Brothers filed for bankruptcy and Chuck E. Cheese filed for bankruptcy. But then you go one step down into the actual small businesses, the actual glow zones that have 2 or 3 locations. They're closed for good. They're just closed and wiped out and gone. And I think that's probably been happening all over the country, especially places that are shut down, which like I've been saying is 2/3 to 3/4 of the whole fucking country that's been like that. And I think you're going to see all the small businesses that have been basically driven out of business and just not even really been talked about and not even really been covered because they want the corporate subsidies to go to the corporations that are already doing great. We've heard Elon Musk whining about, oh, the production capacity of California and they've done this and they've done that. Tesla's doing pretty fucking good right now compared to a lot of companies that are totally out of business. And that's what we hadn't been talking about. And I think that's what killed Perdue and Loeffler in Georgia. I think that's what killed Trump, is the fact that it's just people have really not been paying attention to how bad the economy is. They've talked about 2020 as though it's just the worst. And in a weird way, they've undersold it and oversold it at the same time. They've oversold it in the fact that, like, there's riots in the streets, there's protests, Minneapolis is on fire, Portland, Oregon's on fire, Kenosha, Wisconsin's on fire. They've oversold that aspect. And then the underselling aspect of this mom and pop business that's been in the community for 20 years, they've quietly closed their doors and they're never going to reopen. And that hasn't really been sold to people. And that hasn't really been talked about. And they've undersold that because they're covering the flash, the sizzle, the sex, the violence. And there's a quiet desperation that's not as sexy to talk about. Just the closing of a shop that's been in your neighborhood for 10 years that people have enjoyed, a restaurant. Quietly, the disappearing of these stores. Once he's gone, I think there will finally be an accounting of just driving through your neighborhood and seeing that's closed, for sale there, foreclosure there, and just seeing the hollowing out of the commercial real estate market. I do want to go back to a little bit of hope and optimism to where people kept playing up this idea, Joe Biden, he didn't do as great as he did amazing. He's the first Democrat to win both Arizona and Georgia in the same presidential cycle since Harry Truman. Bill Clinton won Georgia in 92 and he won Arizona in 96, but no Democrat has won them in the same cycle since Harry Truman in 1948. He flipped states that looked downright impossible and he flipped them. So he won back the blue wall, the Michigan, the Pennsylvania, and the Wisconsin, and that was enough. That's all he had to do. But then to take both Arizona and Georgia, that's amazing. And I think we really need to celebrate how well he did. 7 million votes is not nothing. I'm trying to kind of get across this, the biggest blowout we've had in a long time. Okay, it's a huge victory for him. Bigger than Bush ever won by. Bush never won the popular vote in 2000 and 2004. Keep in mind, 7 of the last 8 presidential cycles, the Republicans have lost the popular vote. Trump's never won the popular vote. Bush only won it in 2004. This is about 3 million votes. Bush won his only popular vote victory, the only one they've had, 7 of the last 8 presidential elections, by a similar margin to how Hillary Clinton beat Trump in 2016 in the popular vote. So let that sink in. Really let that sink in and absorb that you now have a party, in terms of the popular vote, has been irrelevant since the 80s. In my lifetime, they've won one popular vote victory, and they've been completely irrelevant since the 80s. That's a long damn time to be locked out of the popular vote, yet they've been in power about half that time because of the goddamn Electoral College. But I really think that once Biden and the Senate takes over, they have to begin to look at the Electoral College. And why isn't Puerto Rico a state and D.C. a state? I'm hoping D.C. and Puerto Rico statehood, that's very easy for them to do. And I'm hoping they'll start with that because that's a good step in the right direction. D.C. and Puerto Rico, they have to vote on it themselves, which they have. And they've passed it themselves. Puerto Rico passed it last November. That was one of the big stories that you didn't hear anything about. Just kind of disappeared. But D.C. and Puerto Rico statehood, they have to pass it on their end. They did. Then the House has to pass it. They already have. Nancy Pelosi has. And Mitch McConnell's Senate. That's what's been blocking it. So I really think Chuck Schumer's got to make that a priority to where you have 2 new states, 4 new Democratic senators come in. And now they're saying, well, the only reason it wouldn't happen would be if Biden just didn't want to do it for some reason. If he just didn't want to sign it. That would be a huge mistake. And I really hope that he doesn't go along with that. There's already a lot of signals that is he really understanding the time period that we're in? He's still talking about unity and bipartisanship and healing the country. He's still kind of in a moment that may not be the moment that we're actually in, but I still think you have to go full steam ahead with this. If Puerto Rico becomes a state, that's 6 new Electoral College votes for the Democrats, in addition to the Senate seats. So there's a Senate reason to do it from, obviously, Puerto Rico and D.C., 4 new senators. That's great. We no longer have to fight out these squeakers in Georgia that are absolutely ridiculous. That way, Joe Biden doesn't become the first Democratic president to enter Congress since Grover Cleveland back in the 1800s with a hostile Congress. Because he was going to be. If Mitch McConnell had held on to the Senate, he would have been the first Democratic president since Grover Cleveland to not have Congress do the right thing. Which that sucks for him in 100 different ways because they don't pass a stimulus, a third stimulus. They don't do much of anything. And I just want to add to this. People say things like, but Ted Cruz and Josh Hawley and these Republicans, that there's something like 140 Republicans in the Congress that have refused to admit Biden won the race. Now, this has got to be discussed because this is staggering to me. It's not close. Can you imagine if this race had actually been close? I mean, can you even imagine that? Like, if it had been Florida 2000, I think Trump could have stole it. If it came down to 1,000 votes in Florida, I think he could have stole it. But it's not close. It's 7 million votes. And it's three states. You know, the fact that he kept putting all this pressure in Georgia, in Georgia, in Georgia, it wouldn't have made a fucking difference. And people say, yeah, but if he can get Georgia overturned, if he can find these mysterious 11,000, you know, whatever the specific number was, if he can find those votes, get Georgia overturned, then he can open up Michigan and Wisconsin and Arizona. He can look at the others that were somewhat close. But I think that would be such a long shots, long shots, long shot to be like, well, I magically found 12,000 more votes in Georgia. Now let's go do the same thing in Arizona and Wisconsin and or Michigan. It's so crazy to me. He's lost by 7 million votes. It's not close. But he wants to fight out three squeakers in the Electoral College. Three separate states have to find thousands of votes that don't exist so he can overturn them. Even if he had done that, is that really how you'd want to do it? Oh, let's deny the will of the people. 7 million people have spoken that they'd rather have Biden than me. And several states came in and they had him over me in the beginning. But months later, let's find thousands of votes so that I can stay in there 4 more years. Is that really how you'd want to do a second term? Many people have asked the question, why does Trump even want to fucking be there? He's horrible at being president. He sucks at it. Worst of all time. The history books, there's always this sort of thing with historians where they really underplay how bad contemporary presidents are. They like to put some distance. That's why when you look at the worst of all time presidents, I think it's goddamn ridiculous that Andrew Johnson and James Buchanan still top that list. I think that's absurd. Why are they at the top of the worst presidents of all time? Well, James Buchanan, he was the worst president because he was right before the Civil War. And Andrew Johnson, he was the worst because he was right after the Civil War. Okay, who's the best president? Abraham Lincoln, the guy who was president during the entirety of the Civil War. I'm like, so Abraham Lincoln, who had the Civil War raging, before he took office, the South started to secede. And after he was assassinated, the Civil War didn't end when Lee surrendered at Appomattox. There were several huge Confederate brigades, like in Texas, like in some other states, that surrendered after Lincoln's assassination. So the entirety of his presidency is occupied by the Civil War. He's the best of all time. But James Buchanan and Andrew Johnson, they're the worst because they're right before and right after. That makes a lot of fucking sense. And I think if you were making a genuine, honest list of the worst presidents of all time, you'd have to put Richard Nixon on there. You'd have to put Herbert Hoover on there. You'd have to put George W. Bush on there. It's a scandal to me. Who's the rest of your top five worst of all time list? They say Harrison or some irrelevant pick like that. And it's like, why? Oh, he gave a 2-hour long speech in the rain and then he got pneumonia and he died 31 days. I'm like, this is ridiculous. You're bending over backwards not to include Republicans. More contemporary Republicans clearly deserve to be on the worst of all time list. If Nixon doesn't, who does? First president to ever have to resign. Herbert Hoover, wiped out in a blowout from the Great Depression and didn't believe we should fight the Nazis. Warren Harding, the Teapot Dome scandal and all the various scandals that he had, and George W. Bush, disgrace, total fucking disgrace. If I make a list of the worst presidents of all time, I have to stack it at least 4 out of 5 contemporary Republican presidents because they've been that fucking bad. But Trump's going to go down really badly. The first president to ever been impeached twice. The first president not only to be impeached, but impeached by members of his own party. He can call it the partisan impeachment all he wants. These are the only nonpartisan impeachments in U.S. history. Like I said the first time, Mitt Romney and Justin Amash, the very first impeachment. This impeachment, Liz Cheney, Dick Cheney's daughter, for God's sakes. I mean, 10 separate Republican representatives, and I would think at least 1 or 2 Republican senators. If Mitt Romney voted to impeach him the first time, I can't imagine he won't do it the second time. And you probably have a couple that would join him. I mean, Susan Collins just won re-election in Maine, and she's 100 years old. What's she got to lose? I mean, I know she probably won't because she's a jellyfish and she has no spine and no backbone, but she has nothing to lose to vote for impeachment. She just won re-election. A lot of these people that just won re-election, Ben Sasse, he just won it. And this brings me to a big thing that I want to get into. I kind of wish I'd put this earlier in the podcast because it's important, but people say, why do the 140 Republicans in Congress, why do they pretend that Trump got screwed, that he got cheated? And like I've been saying, the race is not close. It's not like 10 votes in one state or some crazy shit like that. Like, it's not even remotely close. So why are they spreading this bullshit, absolute horrendous lie that Trump got screwed, that he got cheated, that he was ripped off somehow? I think it's got nothing to do with Trump. And I don't think it's because of the base. They say, well, they're afraid of the base. The base is so insane, they're scared of them. I don't think that's it. I think it's because they don't want Biden to be legitimate. They don't want to have to do a thing he says. And if they can keep up this bullshit lie that Biden's not legitimate, which they do this for every Democratic president, by the way. Richard Nixon thought it was a good idea to authorize the Whitewater break-in. and they break into the Democratic headquarters, a race that everybody thought he was going to win anyway. He wants his henchmen to break into the Democratic headquarters and steal some information for him. That's insane and outrageous. Then Reagan comes along and thinks it's a good idea to cut a deal with Iran, so they don't release the hostages, so it makes Jimmy Carter look bad. Foreign collusion with an enemy. And people point that out a lot when I say, well, Trump's the first president ever elected by a hostile foreign entity. They're like, no, don't forget Iran and Ronald Reagan. That's outrageous. Then you have Bill Clinton come into office, and they impeach him for a blowjob. What he was impeached for was absolutely insane. Andrew Johnson, going all the way back to what I was talking about earlier, what was Andrew Johnson actually impeached for by the Republicans? He fired a cabinet position that they didn't want him to. Trump fires cabinet people all day that they don't want him to. He fires all these different cabinet officials and people like that he shouldn't. If firing cabinet officials, which they only did that to Andrew Johnson because they didn't want him to have any real power, so the Republicans at the time, they passed all these laws specific to him to limit his executive power. He fires a cabinet official anyway. They impeach him for it. Well, Trump does that, so obviously that's not an impeachable offense anymore, or he would have been out the door a long time ago. He's fired more than half his cabinet, burns through people all the time. But you have Bill Clinton impeached over a blowjob, which is outrageous. Then you have the presidency literally stolen from Al Gore, and if you watch the movie 537 Votes and some other documentaries, I don't see how you can conclude that it wasn't stolen from Al Gore. I don't see how you can come to that conclusion. Then in 2008, Barack Obama wins the presidency. Fair and square, electoral college, yes. Popular vote, yes. Biggest landslide in years, yes. Well, he's not really legitimate because he's from Kenya. So he never should have been allowed to become president. They can't find anything in the actual election to signify that he shouldn't be. So then they have to spread this wild bullshit birther conspiracy theory that, oh, well, he didn't really win and he doesn't really belong there. 2012, he beats Mitt Romney. Donald Trump goes out and says, the election's rigged. And people forget. Go look at the tweets. He said the 2012 election was rigged, where Mitt Romney really won against Barack Obama. Ironic now that him and Romney, they're such enemies or whatever, when he was willing to throw out a completely baseless lie that Mitt Romney was screwed from the presidency. 2016 comes along, Hillary Clinton wins by 3 million votes. Oh, we're still going to put Trump in anyway. And we're going to do it because of a mixture of James Comey doing the unprecedented thing that he did, and the Russians doing the unprecedented thing that they did, and the fact that nobody in the government seemed to want to stop the Russians from doing this. I mean, it was outrageous that they were allowed to get away with that. 2016, they asked Trump, the race is rigged. If Hillary wins, the race is rigged. The race is rigged. There's no way I can win. He wins through the bizarrest of technicalities. The race is fine. It's fine. I won. Everything's fine and legitimate. Nobody look here. Nobody even check the votes in the swing states that I lost by. Don't even look at that. 2020 comes along. Joe Biden wins in a blowout. It's not legitimate. So this is just the same shit they've been doing all the way back since Nixon, and probably even earlier than that, where in their minds, there's no such thing as a legitimate Democratic president. No matter what they do, how they win, how big a margin they win by, they're not legitimate. They didn't really win. And they can do this and say, Biden, he doesn't have a right to pass a third stimulus. Biden, he doesn't have a right to make Puerto Rico and D.C. states. Biden, he doesn't have a right to pass the Green New Deal or whatever equivalent environmental package he wants to, because he's not legitimate. He wasn't really elected. This is why they've spread this bold-faced lie. It's not about Trump. It's not about the base. They say, oh, they're just so scared of the base. Mitt Romney voted to impeach Trump. There's been no recall Mitt Romney effort. Utah's redder than hell. Reddest of red states. There's been no serious, real blowback to him voting to impeach Donald Trump. Ben Sasse, before the 2020 election, weeks before, he badmouthed Donald Trump. He was reelected in a blowout. He just got reelected in Nebraska, the reddest of red states other than Utah. This is Trump country, and he was just reelected by a huge margin in Nebraska. Nobody cares. What Republicans care about is balls. They care about strength. I don't think there's been really that much blowback to the Republicans that have said Trump sucks. I think that's not as bad as being Ted Cruz or just being totally wishy-washy or campaigning so vigorously against Trump and then looking spineless. I think the people who really suffer the most in their associations with Trump, I think it's people who look spineless. People who carry his water, who do his bidding, and then of course he inevitably fucks them over, which always happens. Nobody who's ever gotten close to Trump has not been screwed over. Michael Cohen, Scaramucci, now Giuliani. You saw Giuliani on TV for months at a time, supposedly doing legal work for Donald Trump, really embarrassing himself. Now Trump doesn't want to pay him. Predictably, he's going to stiff Giuliani. He's fucked over every wife, every business partner, the ghost author of his books says Trump's a sociopath. His first two wives had to take him to court. Everybody that's ever gotten close to him has been fucked over by this man, usually financially, personally. It's absurd to still show loyalty to this clown. Ted Cruz, run through the list. I know you've heard it on MSNBC 100 times. Says his dad killed JFK. Says Ted Cruz might be the Zodiac killer. Calls his wife ugly and mentally unstable. I mean, it's horrendous stuff. Why show loyalty to this man unless you're just a total fucking opportunistic creep? And people don't respect that. The Never Trumpers are going to look pretty damn good in about 6 months. There's not going to be any serious blowback for Mitt Romney and Ben Sasse. Do you think people are still going to give a shit that Mitt Romney voted to impeach Trump in 2024 when he's up for re-election? Nobody's going to care. And nobody's going to care that Ben Sasse, Lisa Murkowski, is going to run for re-election in Alaska in 2 years, and she'll probably get it. Susan Collins just won her re-election. There's not this big demand out there for people to stay ultra loyal to Trump. I don't care what people say about the politicians. They have to suck up to the base or they'll turn on them. I don't believe that. I don't think that's true. I think Republicans, more than anything, they want balls. They want strength. They want backbone. George W. Bush was the most popular Republican president I'd ever seen. And then only 8 years later, Donald Trump's running and shitting on Jeb Bush, shitting on the Iraq War, shitting on George W. Bush. Says, I hate George W. Bush. I never voted for him. I didn't like him. Abraham Lincoln couldn't have been elected because of how bad a job George W. Bush did. And that's actually one of the few things I agree with Trump about when he was going after the Bushes. But he took a man that was so popular in the Republican Party, 2008, 2010, George W. Bush who? Here comes the Tea Party. Donald Trump could be that right now. The Republicans could take their party back this minute, but they're not, because they're trying to spread the lie that Joe Biden's not legitimate and therefore has no mandate to rule and can't do anything and shouldn't be allowed to do anything. That's the reason they're doing this, not for any loyalty to Trump or that they even give a shit about the guy. For those reasons and more, this is why Trump is the worst of all time. And this is why I'll be very excited to see Joe Biden be inaugurated. One of the happiest moments I've had in 2020. It wasn't the night of the election, because that was kind of scary because we didn't know. But we knew that millions and millions of his votes were going to come in through mail-in balloting. We knew that, right? Because of the way that they were distributed. Everybody knew that. But when Joe Biden went to that parking lot, and it was about a week after the election, I think it was the Saturday night after the election, and he officially said, I won. It's over. I'm glad to be here. And they had that fireworks show, and they had a Coldplay song playing, and there were fireworks in the sky, and Joe Biden was looking misty-eyed. That's the first time in a long time I felt better, that somebody competent, sane, courageous, compassionate, more than anything, is going to be in the White House caring about American people, competently doing the job, taking care of us. And it made me feel better. And that night, where Joe Biden wins, even though Trump has drug it out for months, even though he's refused to accept it, even though Republicans have refused to accept it, all their bullshits and their stunts and their protests, I don't care. Because when Joe Biden's inaugurated, it's going to be that feeling of the fireworks in the sky, the Coldplay song, the misty-eyed, compassionate grandfather finally taking back control of the country and just thinking, wow, I can't believe it. And it's also inspiring because he first ran for president decades ago, as we know, and it shows that people shouldn't give up. It's a story of determination and persistence and the fact that you can have a second act that is greater than you ever could have imagined. That's inspiring to me. Not watching some whiny billionaire bitch who inherited everything complain that he's been screwed. Fuck that guy. I'm glad he's gone. The inauguration will be in the next episode, and I personally cannot wait. Thanks for listening, everybody. Hope you've had a good few months. Welcome to 2021.